Hey everyone, this is Joseph from Team Tatro, and welcome back to another episode of the Tatro Radio Podcast. So today's episode is actually an interview episode featuring Jimmy Jules, a Swiss music producer who has had a lot of success and even collaborated on some music that did really well on the charts in the UK. So they talk about music production and kind of the process of it and how it can be challenging and hectic, but there are ways to make it simpler for yourself so that you can get more music finished. But before we get into the interview, I just want to let everyone know a couple things. Tatro's new track, Coast, just came out yesterday. So I'll put the link in the description down below so you can go to Spotify and check that out. Any streams would be greatly appreciated. And also, Beattober is coming up in just a couple of weeks. So everybody get ready. Beattober is going to be a lot of fun this year. A lot of giveaways and everything is all for a good cause. There's a link down below in the description as well so you can get more information about Beattober. But also follow Nick on Twitter and Instagram, and you'll definitely keep updated on everything that's going to happen with that. But let's get into the interview.
Without further ado, why don't we get into it today? We've got an amazing, like I said, artist, DJ, producer, extraordinaire here joining us as a guest. So without further ado, let me welcome to the show our guest, Jimmy Jules. What's up, Jimmy? Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Yeah. Thank you for the invite. Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. Spring is coming, so I'm feeling really well.
It's a different feeling, right? The change of the seasons.
Definitely.
And you just had a release, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, like on Innovisions, the number 98. It's the EP called "Ham the Monkey." It's about the monkey, the first monkey actually shot, or the first monkey they shot into space and landed safely.
Was the monkey's name Ham?
Yes.
That's an amazing name for a monkey. Well, I want to get more into that and talk more about where that concept and all that came from in the process of making that new release. But
sure.
I generally like to start these interviews getting to know the artist and having the audience get to know the artist by talking about how do you define yourself? Because in electronic music, you know, there's DJs, producers. Are you just an artist? Are you just a creative? Like when people ask you what you do, what do you tell them? How do you define what you do? Tough question.
I don't know. Good question. I actually don't know. I'm a musician. Yeah. I was born as a musician, or I more feel like a musician than a DJ.
Sure.
I feel like a musician / producer. DJ also, but actually most of my 33 years I played in band and played live and played instruments, you know. And of course I play a lot as a DJ, but I always play like live music influenced music. So basically...
Awesome.
I'm more kind of a musician.
Yeah.
Or I'm more like a guy who has fun with his instruments.
Yeah, that's a really cool perspective. Let's talk about that history in music. Like, what was your, you know, how did you first start dipping your toe into the waters of music and first instrument you picked up? First time you knew that you were born as a musician?
Also, interesting question. Luckily, I was born into a musician family. So my mother was the only non-musician in my family. My grandfather was a musician. He played in orchestra, the trumpet, or cornet. I don't know the word in English. Maybe cornet.
Too. Yeah, they have cornet.
It's kind of a horn too. Yeah. You know? Then my grandmother, she used to be a singer, like a Swiss folk singer. You know, like yodel.
Yeah.
I'm from Switzerland, so it's pretty like classic.
Yeah, amazing.
And then my aunt is a singer too. Then two of my uncles, they're playing like in the opera and the Tonhalle Orchestra. It's like two of the biggest or the two most famous classical orchestras in Switzerland. They're touring also. And so my biggest inspiration was kind of my grandfather. He played the cornet. I was always around him. So I didn't grow up with my dad. I more grew up with my grandparents, grandfather, you know. and my mother too, but you know, the inspiration came from my grandfather. And then when I smashed his cornet for the first time, it was like around 1.5 or something like that. Wow. So he bought me as a birthday present for my second birthday, or maybe third, I'm not sure. he bought me a small cornet.
Awesome.
So that was kind of the beginning, yeah.
Well, that's really cool. So it's like, seems like classical, traditional roots for you in music.
Yeah, I'm actually, most of the people, they are always, how do you say, when they write about me or talk about me, they are always mentioning this, like, this heritage from Martinique, you know, from the Caribbean islands and Africa and stuff. But I'm more influenced by, like, white music.
Right. It know? Sounds like it.
I'm really Swiss in this kind of sense. I really love, like, Swiss folk music, and I love brass music. You know what brass music is?
Yeah, like brass, like quartets, brass and things.
Yeah, yeah. It's like marching bands and like really military stuff. I'm not into military stuff, but like the music, it touches me because I grew up with it, you know?
Yeah, it almost has a nostalgic like feel of home, I'm sure, or something like that. Yeah. Just having that sort of classical background foundation in the musical family, how did that influence you learning music and coming into? First of all, I want to know, how did the connection even happen between that traditional foundation and then the electronic music side of things? Like, how did that evolve?
Well, this is a long way.
Yeah.
You know, I was trained like really hard. You know, this like Russians who trains really hard. I was this kind of kid.
Yeah.
So I started when I was 3, and like my uncles and my family, they are really, you know, they put a lot of pressure on me, or I had a lot of pressure. I felt a lot of pressure. Maybe I took it too personal, you know?
Yeah.
But like everybody, or in Switzerland, they're kind of famous, you know, in the music industry, in the classical music industry, not pop industry. So for me, it was like I always wanted to be like the same level. So I had to train hard. I went to a teacher like twice a week when I was 5 already.
Wow.
I was reading notes when I was 4 already. I had my first band, or I played in the first band when I was 6 or 7 or something like that. I was like by far the youngest. Then I switched teachers. Like I also had a teacher who was like more into jazz and blues. So he influenced me a little bit with jazz and blues already, like from an early age. But my, how do you say, my inspiration, or what I really wanted to do, was like, I wanted to be a trumpet player.
For sure.
So I trained a lot. And as a kid, when you are surrounded by a lot of musicians or the family, you are kind of really good, you know?
Yeah.
So I went to like this championships and won everything. And then I turned 14 and I went to sports class and I smashed the teeth.
Oh no.
Before like the championship, the biggest championship. And then it was the first time I didn't won. And then I stopped playing the trumpet.
That's
really
crazy.
Egoistically, you know, it's like, so I stopped the whole thing. And then it was more, you know, when you're a teen, you're a rebel, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of this rebel. So I thought like,
what's the opposite? Like, what's the other direction?
Total opposite. Yeah. So it was sports. So I started to do sports and I started to play like the bass tuba.
Okay.
This is also the word in English.
Yeah.
So I started to play the bass tuba. And this was like the foundation of my musical career, because I realized that actually bass is my instrument, not trumpet.
Interesting.
Because I'm more the guy who needs to feel the music, you know?
Sure.
Like I need to be touched. I listen to music, but I have like a lot higher intense, or how do you say, I feel more attached to bass music.
Yeah, like I'm the doing groove now, and the feel in general.
Not only the groove, it's more the, I don't know. for example, I like loud music. I like to listen loud music, you know, I need to feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I had regular bands. I started with rock too and jazz. And when I turned 18 or something like that, I went to jazz school. I switched the whole thing from classic to jazz. And then I was like there a little bit, not really happy. I really liked it, but it wasn't that kind of thing I wanted to do, you know?
Right.
So when I turned 19 or something like that, I saw Sven Fett for the first time. And that changed the whole thing, you know? I was like, just new at jazz, at the jazz school. I switched from Lucerne to Zurich. And then I saw Sven Fett, and this changed the whole thing in my perspective. Because as a kid, I loved Daft Punk and FX Twin, but around my block, there wasn't, a record shop or something like that. So I didn't know what this music was.
Right.
So I was always going on Wednesday to local, like, commercial record CD shops, you know, to listen to Daft Punk, but they didn't know that this is techno or how it was made. And then when I saw like Sven Fett for the first time, it was also like around 2006 or something like that, seven, like just like the internet was coming up like faster, you know.
Yep.
You could Google something, and then from this moment on, I stopped doing all the more classical stuff and jazzy stuff and went full on with the electronic music.
Yeah. So was your initial approach to try to use your instrumental and your musical knowledge to kind of make your own productions, or did you start off with a more traditional DJing style?
I first started with producing. It was kind of the same time, you know. I had a good friend. He was a really famous DJ at the moment, or like at this moment, like more hip hop. And I wasn't at all into hip hop. I was just into drinking, listening to punk and like other stuff. But he learned me all the stuff. He showed me the programs and he showed me the music too. In the beginning, of course, Sven Fett was like the first guy who played techno in front of me. But I started more with lighter stuff, like more electropop and like this Justice stuff, Ed Banger from Paris, you know, like the French scene. And what was the question again? Sorry.
I guess it's just like how did this all start? And you kind of answered it. So how did you start forming your own? When do you think your sound, the sound that we kind of know today, like how did that end up getting formed? Because you said you started more electro pop, that sort of thing. But like how did you develop into the electronic music artist that you are today?
That was, I can say it. Wait. And it was 8.5 years ago.
Wow. So you like feel like
I know the moment.
Day. Yeah, the moment.
I actually know the moment where things has changed.
Tell me
drastically.
About it.
My girlfriend was pregnant. We were sitting on the bed. We was listening to Calabrese. It's a Swiss artist, like actually a friend of mine now. But I was like a big, or still I'm the biggest Calabrese fan, you know. It's a good friend, it's a good mentor, it's like for me it's one of the best musicians in 2020 still, you know, because he's always really honest. Most of the guys are not really honest or are not really good in, how do you say, showing their honesty through music, you know.
Sure. Can you define that though? What does that mean? What does that mean, showing honesty through music?
Yeah, no, most of the music is only fake music, in my opinion.
Define that for me. What does that mean?
It's like, it's about the message in the music. Mm-hmm. It's not just doing music because the fame. It's like, if you need to, how do you say? It's really, nobody asked me this question ever, so it's really hard to describe. But
I think for sure there is a clear dividing line between music from artists that feel authentic, like they're doing something because, I mean, you described it as being born a musician. I think I can really resonate with that. Like, I just don't know anything else. That's just where my instincts have led me. And then you can definitely kind of sniff out when folks are maybe don't have that same passion, don't have it kind of in their blood and are just sort of in it for the commerce aspect, I guess you could say.
I guess it has nothing to do with like trained or not to be trained.
It's right. Just the intention.
The point of view. Yeah, the intention.
Yeah.
It's like, I know a few guys, they are really honest with their music, you know? It's like, it's really hard to explain.
Totally.
listen to Calabrese, then you know what I mean, you know?
Yes. So that was a super influential artist for you. And in what way? I know you described him as a mentor. Like, in what way were you sort of like mentored, and how did that kind of evolve?
Yeah, actually, the kickoff was like 1 week before that scenery or that scene on the bed. It was actually, he listened to my album, like it was like my master's degree album. And he listened to it, and we actually spoke for the first time together, and he gave me a feedback and blah, 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 you know. And then, in this kind of, like, in this hour where we was listening to Calabrese, I realized that I should actually use all the instruments I have learned as a kid.
Right.
You know? Till then, I was like producing, but I had like different artists, and I need to do like techno separate. And like the guitar away and the trumpet away and right. the tuba away, you know, all the instruments. And I all only went on like with Logic, you know, I produced everything on Logic and it sounded crap.
Yeah.
I didn't like my music. And then it was like when I realized that Calabrese just does the music I was born with or grew up with, you know, it made things a lot easier for me. So at this point, I started like, I did like 2 hours later, I did my first Jimmy Jules track.
That's amazing.
With more music, like with the guitar and trumpet in it. And this changed the whole point of view.
Yeah. So could you just tell instantly that it had shifted and that it felt right?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Since that moment, I didn't have depressions anymore based on producing.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. And have you ever looked back? Have you ever gone into a kind of put the instruments aside again and just gone a purely like in the box DAW approach? Or have you stuck with this for the rest of your career?
Actually, it's really interesting. I'm not using my instruments all the time, but I have like... Afterwards, I bought like a lot of synthesizers and other percussion instruments. Like, but like, I guess, my music is kind of special because I never quantize.
Oh, interesting.
I never really use MIDI. I always, even arpeggios, I play by my own. That gives like this strange feeling that it's not really tight, you know,
right.
But I like it. It's kind of like, it's techno. I'm doing loop music more like James Brown.
Sure.
I'm playing all by myself except kick and hi-hats, you know.
Right.
But like all the instruments in it or the music is just like actually jammed, you know. And
wow.
Then I cut it and place it.
Do you find that to be a challenge or more time consuming? Like how much time are you spending trying to lock something in, and how much do you lock something in if you really want it to have that sort of unquantized organic feel?
Yeah, it's actually I'm really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to be fast. In the beginning I was really slow, but now I guess like it can't, it actually I just finished, or I'm in the finishing of a project. I can't talk about it, but mm-hmm. like it was actually the first time I worked 3 months on like not a lot of tracks.
Oh wow.
it was like the first time, like precise, like playing the bass, like for example, five times and choosing the right one,
right.
Recording vocals 200 times and choosing the right three ones, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like just, you know, my music is not really perfect. If you compare my music to maybe Agents of Time, because Fidele was at your show too, you know? They are more precise, you know, more, it's more raw,
right,
and precise and quantized, you know. I really love this music, but it's not me, you know.
Sure.
Me, I'm really chaotic, like you saw before the show.
Right,
I'm always late.
I mean, that goes back to you trying to be the honest, authentic artist. It truly is you. That's so funny. I want to take a little quick break and say hello to everybody who's in the chat. Thank you all for joining us today. What's going on, Noise Arcade, Jazz G, everybody who's tuned in a little later. Karina, hello. Shout out to Dex Jetto, who became a VIP member. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And Ray Calvin and Nefertiti Gold, hello. Welcome. As usual, everybody, if you have questions for our guest, please leave them in the chat. And if they make sense for the conversation, I will weave them in as we go. So I really appreciate it. Oh, what's going on, Star Stuff? We've got Kevin Tetralt, is that in the question in the chat? Awesome. Groovius Maximus, what's going on, everybody? Thank you. We're having a chat with Jimmy Jules, who has an upcoming pro session this weekend with 343 Labs, getting into like your creative process, all that good stuff, over a two-day sort of workshop masterclass this weekend. But yes, we were talking about your chaotic nature. And I kind of put in the title too, chaos in music production with like Jimmy Jules, because we have this video that we put together to promote the pro session. And you talk about how you say, I don't know how to finish a track. I don't know how to finish a song. It just somehow happens in the beautiful chaos of the music making process. I wonder if you can talk about like what you mean by the beautiful chaos of the music making process and what that means for you.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, music making has like two sides, a really bright side and a really dark side. And the really bright side is like 98% and the last 2% are like the darkest side of the music, you know. It puts you under pressure. I always feel like really stressed if I need to finish something.
Sure.
Because my tracks are never finished. I always hear something more, or I could always do like
tweak 40 something
different versions of it. So actually, like this beautiful chaos is like, I don't show you my studio. I need to clean it before, because in this process, it's like cables and synth everywhere. And yeah, it's.
That's a beautiful chaos in itself, though.
Yeah, but like, during I'm working, like time flies. It can fly like 20 hours. I never did drugs or something like that, so I don't take substances like other producers to do music. I'm just here and like music is my drug, actually, you know?
Yeah.
I can stay here for easy 20 hours. And somehow, sometimes tracks feel finished after 10 minutes. Like, for example, there's a track on my latest EP on Inner Visions, Tinnitus. I did this track in 8 minutes.
Wow. It's funny how that like happens sometimes.
Done. Yeah, sometimes. And that's what I mean, you know. I don't know how to finish a track, because sometimes it takes like 8 minutes. And sometimes I just recently finished a track I was working on for 6 years or eight years. And it doesn't really sound differently than in the beginning, but something in it, you know, the arrangement and something has changed. I can't explain it, but something feels right now and before it hasn't. And I don't even know what it was, you know, because for me, it's actually it sounds the same, you know.
Has that ever hindered your music making process and releasing music? Because you are like a professional musician, so you do want to keep up regular releases. So how do you... What discipline have you built up to make sure that not every track ends up like that, takes 6 years to finish, you know?
Good question.
Or are we just getting lucky because we have some of the 8 minute tracks and some of the 6 year tracks, you know? Like,
yeah, actually, I'm really productive.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of material.
Right.
Really a lot, you know? So I guess like out of 100 tracks, 4 gets released.
Wow. But you have that 100 tracks to pull from, I think is the important part there.
Yeah, I guess like on my stick to play, I have more than a few 100 tracks that I can play in the club. I could play like easily all night long with only my own tracks.
Yeah.
But the thing is, actually, I have a rule in my music for releases. The track needs to be at least half a year before I release the track.
Really? So at least 6 months?
But, yeah. It can be finished, but the release needs to be, you know, if it's not good after 1 year or half a year, then maybe it's not worth to release it.
Sure.
For me, and you know, every producer is always copying the same track again and again and again and again.
Trying to recreate their successes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not recreating. It's just like, you know, it's just a language you speak. Most of the people doesn't understand that, like, they're actually kind of limited because they feel what they feel, you know, and they try what they can do, you know.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, we had a question in chat from Noise Arcade. Is there a time frame when you work on an idea that you just wouldn't come back to? You kind of touched on that a little bit. Because it is hard to think of a track that's a year old or something, and it's hard to imagine going back to it. But it sounds like you've had both experiences. Some get cut and then some you hang on to. I wonder what's the distinction.
You never know.
You never know.
I had everything, you know. I had tracks that I hated in the beginning. I'm not a deleting guy. I'm not the guy who does something and then I delete it. I always think about maybe, you know, in 2 years. And actually it's true, you know. I also released tracks that were in this first 10 tracks I ever made. Because I went back or I accidentally came over like a hard drive and found those pieces. And I thought like, whoa, the ideas were like amazing, but I wasn't able to create the power for the dance floor.
Right.
It's just ideas. And then I worked it out and yeah, I released it.
Yeah,
no,
that's
so you never know.
That's really interesting. I can't imagine, because I imagine a lot of us probably have project folders full of good ideas, but as we get better and better at the craft of production, we can make those ideas, we can bring those ideas to life even better. So I wonder what it would be like revisiting some very early projects with the knowledge that you have now, you know, like that seems like a good project for anybody to kind of go back and do. That's cool. You mentioned earlier about working fast, about how you're pretty fast at what you do, and maybe that contributes to having so much material. But do you want to touch on like what is speed to you? Like what does that mean in your process? Like what does it mean to be fast?
That I could finish a track in, let's say, 1 hour.
Yeah.
That I can work. And I can continue working. I never got stopped by like a loss of ideas or inspiration.
Right.
I have a lot of friends. They are sometimes really blocked, you know, they can't do music for half a year, a year. I never had that. I can do music all day long, 24/7, you know?
For sure.
It's more like, and I guess as more you work and as longer you work, you're getting faster. It's like you're getting a pro, you're getting a professional, and you stop, I guess like after 10 years, you stop to think when you're at the studio. You just do.
Yeah, it becomes almost instinctual.
Yeah, you just do, and then it's getting fast. And actually, I was a ghost producer a few years ago for several years, and that made me really fast in the process.
Right. What you about know, ghost production do you think helped you in that process?
This, like, in retro perspective, it was like the best thing ever happened to me.
Interesting. I'd love to hear more.
Because it was kind of, you always learn.
Yeah.
And if you have somebody next to you that that is like describing the feelings, and you have to interpretate this, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to do music you don't like or you are not really into, but you have to do this for your customer, you know. And then like I guess in every genre there is something somebody likes, even if they don't like the genre. Yeah. So that's the procedure, you know. It's the way, it's not the final result. It's only the way of going through your career. And sometimes it could be helpful to do something you don't like, you know, just to learn how to do it.
Yeah, because
maybe you know?
You always end up learning some bit of a process. And I think what you talked about with the pressure of doing something for somebody else, that's a lot different than the pressure of doing something for yourself, you know?
Yes. You don't have to think, you don't have to choose, because the other one is choosing.
Yeah. So your brain starts focusing on other things instead of making the choices.
Yes.
That's very cool. Yeah. Speed is really important. I think, do you ever have moments like I also think like when I'm working and I'm working instinctually and fast, like that's when I'm doing my best. But do you ever consciously find yourself spending too much time on something and you just have to kill the idea? You just have to move on. You have to put yourself back into the perspective of just keep moving, that sort of thing.
Sure.
It's like
I have it.
It's discipline, I think.
Yeah, but like this kind of. Yeah, in my opinion, it's also hard to explain this because every day is different, you know?
Yeah.
You can work really slow for 15 hours. You can be in the studio the whole day and the whole day is really crappy and like it sounds bad and like it gets worse and you feel really bad. And like the last 5 minutes, ding!
Yeah.
You made like the whole work for 3 days. So right. That's what is interesting for me in music, you know? You never know. You can start, or actually in these times, you know, you can do your first track and it can be like the biggest hit of all time. And every next track is worse.
Yes. I think that semi-related, because Keshav in chat asks, what do you do when you mess up a good track? So you ever have like a moment when you're in the studio for 15 hours or something like that and you've got something going, but it just starts to go off the rails? Like, how do you get back on track?
That's what I meant. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just doing, you know. And when it gets finished, then it's finished. And when not, then maybe somebody is helping me.
Right.
And sometimes not, you know. You never know, you know. I actually, the worst thing that happened, or the worst thing that always happens to me, is like when I'm doing a loop with, let's say, five tracks, you know. And it's already that hit loop.
Right.
Then I'm always like really scared. Oh no, please don't fuck it up.
Yeah. You know? I totally so relate to that. Yeah.
I like to go in smoothly and like in the beginning it's uninteresting. And then like after 2 hours,
it's like a little better.
Matching the volume, and then you realize, oh, the bass, it's the wrong bass. Oh, no, we have the song. Oh, it's finished. You know?
Yeah. But when you get to the good idea too fast, I think it always feels like I always feel guilty. Like, oh, I got to do a little more. Like, yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
You have a lot of cool things that you're touching on in the pro session this weekend, but I do want to see if you wanted to talk, not without giving it all away. There's
easy. I have enough to talk.
Yeah. There's one little aspect in it that I wonder if you can talk a little bit about without, you know, giving too much away, but the whole making music instead of a diary. I know that's kind of on the list of what's getting covered.
Yeah. That's what we talked about. I'm really fast. I'm going to the studio regularly, actually since Corona. Before I have three kids. I'm a father of three kids.
Wow.
So time is limited.
For sure. You're spending 20 hours a day in the studio, but not with three
actually,
kids.
I have the coolest girlfriend in the world.
Ah, you know? That's
if
perfect.
I'm under pressure, like I was like the last 3 months, she let me do my thing and then it's okay. She brings kids to bed, she makes them dinner, she brings them to school and everything's cool.
Amazing.
She's really supportive. I don't know a cooler girl than she is.
For sure.
And a more supportive girl than she is, you know. And yeah, it's always, what was the question again? Sorry.
We're talking about the aspects of making music instead of a diary.
Right. This is really interesting, at least for me, because they told me that I'm a legasthenic when I was a kid. I was reading the notes when I was like small, like I learned it from 2.5 or 3. So I was like really into music and I was reading fluently music, but like normal letters, I was really slow.
Interesting.
So I kept on with school and everything, but music, I always wrote music, you know. For me, it was kind of a diary. And even now, I'm not going to the studio to do an EP or to do an album or to do a single. I'm just going to the studio because I like to go to the studio, and that's like my biggest love besides my family, you know. I'm just doing music. Sometimes I'm even doing folk music or like...
Wow.
Trance music. I tried trance music last time, like 140 BPM, just to look how it feels to me. I don't like it, but just to try, you know. So for me, it's like, and the music always reflects my day. If I'm feeling really sad and I can't do like a happy track, then I'm doing a really sad track, you know. And when I'm bored, I'm doing a bored track. Maybe the arrangement is 15 minutes and nothing is happening, just like a little beep, beep, beep.
Sure.
So that's my diary, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't feel pressured in the studio. I'm just doing like somebody is writing some notes in a diary.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And you kind of mentioned before a little bit about writing for the dance floor, and about how like those early tracks, how you couldn't kind of make them hit on the dance floor as well as you can now. Are you, and but you also just talked about like emotion. Do you feel... I know there's like no pressure in the studio, but do you feel always guided by making music for the dance floor, or are there sometimes it's just like you're just making whatever comes out?
I'm never doing a track for the dance floor or for something. It just comes out how I'm feeling. I of course I'm doing dance music most of the time because I like it. I like the boom and I like the bass and I like the hi-hats and I like to dance. No, I don't like to dance, but I like to watch people dancing.
Right.
But, you know, let's go back to this honesty thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's more like honesty in the music. If I'm feeling to do a dance track, or like it comes out like a dance track, I never do something on purpose. I try to let the music speak and go its way, and at the end when I don't like it, I don't need to release it, you know.
Sure. Absolutely. That's really freeing, actually. And
yeah, it needs to be free.
Yeah. Talking about, I guess, all your instrumental, I see like the mutes in the background, and I know in the videos that we were putting together, there's some like hand percussion, you're recording different sounds. And does any of that bleed over into live performance? Like, are you doing any hybrid live performance or planning any live hybrid performances? Or what is the distinction between the music that you make in the studio versus when you take it onto the stage?
Till 7 years ago, I only played live, and it was always a big mess. I played a lot with bands, but I always also played like not DJ gigs, but like this lonely gigs, this lonely live gigs, DJ live sets, or how,
sure.
how we call it, you know. But I want to go back to live. Since this Corona thing, it makes sense to play live on stage, you know.
It feels like we've all been waiting, you know. We've all been having to be in our studios and not go anywhere and do anything. How did that influence actually? How has the past year of that influenced your work?
Yeah, a lot. For me, egoistically, it was the best time of my life.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I'm for the first time I had nothing to do, you know. Before, when I had nothing to do, I still had school or something like that. When you're a teenager, you are not really free. You are always like the government is touching your brain every day, you know.
Of course.
And now more than 30. Corona came just at the right time, just after our vacation. We did like vacation for the first time, six weeks in a row. And then Corona, I just played in America, 2 gigs or something like that, or 3 gigs, and then over and bye-bye. And in the beginning, of course, I was kind of, how do you say, stressed because of the money.
Yeah.
I felt like when this thing is going off, like for 1 or 2 years, we are fucked big time, you know?
For sure.
And then, but like then, you know, the government and everything, I don't, most of the people survived in the richer countries, let's say that.
Right. Exactly.
So in Switzerland, I'm really happy to be a Swiss citizen, you know?
Yeah.
So it's also from this perspective, I was kind of chill.
For sure. Being from Switzerland, do you think that there's any unique impact on you as an artist or the support for the arts there or the electronic music scene in general? Like, because you did talk about that traditional background, how accepting was the culture of sort of what you're doing now, the electronic side?
So what is the precise question?
I guess
if the artist side or music side or
anything in particular of note about where you're from, any way it influenced you beyond just the traditional music, and was it, do you feel accepted in that culture's music? I guess you could say, like, is there a big scene around? Like, do you feel part of a community, or do you feel like you have to tour and travel to be sort of to do what you do?
To be honest, in Switzerland or like in Zurich and Lucerne, I'm still the local.
Interesting.
I'm not a big artist here in Switzerland. I need to leave my country. It's always like in Switzerland, you know. And on the other hand, you could be like the biggest artist and you are still struggling because Switzerland is so expensive. You get more money when you are working at the supermarket than being a superstar DJ, you know.
Yeah.
So actually, if we would live in Berlin or like whatever other countries in Europe, we would be totally easy. But in Switzerland, it's still like we are not like we don't have more money than the average guy, you know. So that keeps this kind of flow of like being productive. We need to work. Swiss guys are like really into work. Everybody is working all the time, and they like what they do, you know. And if you are able to earn money through music, then people are happy, you know.
Right.
Because it's really expensive here outside. Like for a water, for example, if you buy a water at the Tankstelle, what's Tankstelle? Fuel station. Mm. You pay like $6 or something like that for a water, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess this is kind of like the Swiss way of doing music, taking the time for it when it's working, you know.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I'm always fascinated by how the place an artist is from or the place an artist works and influences the work and influences how they work. And it sounds like it has a pretty deep influence in how you approach it and just the culturally how it happens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. We had a couple questions in the chat about environment, what inspires you, that sort of thing. Is your studio separate from your home? Like, is it like a separate studio?
Yes.
You mentioned 3 kids, so I imagine that is quite helpful.
My dream would be a house with a few friends and a cool studio to hang out. How do you say? Downstairs?
Yeah.
This is my dream. Dream big.
Yes, for sure.
But honestly, when I got bigger a little bit, like we was living in Berlin for not a year, 7 months or something like that. It didn't work out because you need family if you have kids, you know, for the support.
Right.
Then we lived in a house with a few friends and I had my studio like next to it, like just like 1 minute or something like that. And this was kind of the best situation because I was able, after bringing kids to bed, I was able to go to the studio with my pants on, you know.
Right.
only with my pants. Now, actually, and Switzerland is really small than Zurich, you know. So now the studio is a bit far away, like the distance. But it's also only 5 minutes, as you saw me before. You saw my home.
So you were walking from one to the other.
No, I had like this e-scooter.
Oh, nice. Very cool. And is there anything in particular you do to your space to make sure that you can keep that fast workflow, make sure you can stay inspired, anything approach to building that space out?
You mean in a studio?
Yeah, in the studio.
No.
Just bring all the instruments, set up the computer, and good to go.
I can do music wherever I am. I just need time. That's right. The only thing I need. Yeah. I can do music with everything, actually. I don't need my instruments. I can take the phone. Everybody is able to do music in 2021.
For sure. Is there any type of music you're making that is helping you escape? Because you mentioned the phone. Like, I think that is so true. And I want to get better at using my phone, because sometimes using the laptop... The phone has its own distractions, but the laptop, because it has so many, I can open up my DAW, I can open up Ableton Live and have unlimited, options. The phone being a little more limited. I guess, is there any form of escapism for you in any certain kind of music you're making that is escapist, whether it's going out with the phone and making something or field recording or different things like that? Anything that's kind of separate from, the work side of making music, I guess. Or maybe it's all that for you. I'm not sure. Sometimes I think about, like, I have groove boxes, right? In like a Novation Circuit groove box. I can go out with that and I am freed by that slightly, because I am just stuck with the limitations of that device and I can go out wherever. Computer, it's like I have so many options, so I feel somehow having less limitations creates more pressure somehow. I don't know.
Oh, yes. Actually, when I think about that, it's like my computer. Actually, my computer is 12 years old. So new stuff is not running on this. I still have Ableton 9. I still have all the old programs. For this session, my girlfriend gave me her laptop.
Nice.
And Pro Session 2, because on my laptop, it's not possible to install any plugins anymore or something like that.
Wow. Is that your main computer?
Yeah. I only have one computer.
And what's the theory on that? Like, why? Hey, let's see it. Let's break out the antique. Wow. And the Apple still lights up too, I bet. Look how thick it is. A disk drive. What is that for?
That's my everyday laptop since 12 years, 2009 or something like that.
I think that's fascinating, because so often in tech, like, I deal with this a lot, of course, because I have a YouTube channel where I cover like music tech. So everybody wants the newest, latest, greatest thing. Did you develop a discipline somehow where you're like, I don't care about the newest, latest, greatest thing? Are you constantly kind of reminding yourself, no, I don't need a new computer. This computer is fine. Like, what's the mindset behind it? I would love to hear more about it.
A few things. First of all, in the beginning, I didn't have money for it. So I was like, I was working hard to get this laptop. You know? On the other side, I already mentioned my grandfather, and he never spent a dime on unnecessary things. You know, if something, if the shoes were working for 40 years, he wear them for 40 years.
Love that.
And also, like, there was a time I was able, or like since a few years, I could easily buy a new one, you know, but the old one is still working. And I guess I could be more free and more relaxed with an old computer, not having the stress of buying all the new things,
right?
Because they are not working on it. It keeps me away from all this stuff. My phone is new, so if I need something, if I need bitcoins, then I can buy it on my phone, you know. But like music wise, on the other side, you know, there are only plugins, and plugins are like a reflection of something old already been here, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a time when I earned a little bit more money through touring, I started to buy like this guitar pedals or more guitar pedals and synth and like outboard gear. So internally, I only have like this UID plugins, like only a few of them, because mostly I'm recording already processed. So for example, if I need a delay or I want a delay on it, I'm already with maybe this delay or a few other delays I have here. Same with reverb, because in the beginning that took like too much time for me, you know. I was playing something, and when I played something with the soft synth with the plugin, then I was able to change this. And then I was able to
it's
put
infinite
another filter
it just keeps on. Going
it's like, you know, never, and it never got better, you know. Most of the time, it's the sound that sticks out, like the first sound, it sticks out and wow, it sounds amazing, you know? And then you try to process it and it gets worse and worse and worse. And after you worked 5 hours on it, like you take out the plugins and it sounds well again, you know?
Right.
So then a few years, I started to just record with reverbs and delays, and just I'm actually using Ableton only as like shifting tool.
That's funny. That's also very freeing. That's another freeing aspect of your workflow. That's very inspiring for sure. We're coming close to the end here. So any final questions, that burning questions that you want answered, please go ahead and drop them in the chat. But Jimmy, I'll ask you to give us, we talked a little bit about one of the aspects of the Pro Session this weekend, which I'll remind everybody, Pro Session this weekend with Jimmy Jules, kind of a 2-day masterclass. And I've also got a link in the description with coupon code so you can save. Use the code TETROTALKS. Link is in the description. Let's give the folks a little bit of a preview, kind of run down the 2 days. What are you thinking about? What are you going to be getting into? What are you most excited to get into this weekend?
To meet the people.
Well, it is interactive. I should mention that too. Like, there's a moderator and you can interact live too. So that's actually a really important point.
Yeah. It's like to meet the people I'm really free, you know, I can't control. Of course I could produce like, I would work like for a guy I'm producing, you know, but this doesn't make sense. I'm more like the masterclass. I thought a lot about it and I thought like maybe it's more interesting from the ideological side.
Yeah.
I'm doing music, how I see music, how I see the career. Like I'm speaking about like more personal stuff related to music, you know, and the career and everything and DJ and how to do things, what I'm thinking, what's right, you know, or wrong.
Sure.
Not wrong, but right.
You know? Awesome.
And of course, I'm showing my instruments and I'm showing like my workflow and what influenced me and what maybe surprised me. And I will go through a track I made. Maybe it will be full, maybe don't take it personal. But maybe Bogota or Hundeblick.
Cool.
It's still running.
Yeah. That's awesome. Final question. I will give it to Keshav in the chat, who says, what to do when no inspiration strikes?
When no... Just do.
I think for me, I always get that question. It's like, you can't rely on inspiration. Like, what is inspiration? And you've spoken to that throughout this chat today.
What is it? This is a good answer. What is inspiration?
You just keep working.
just do it. Like, as I said, like maybe you're working nonsense or you are working on bullshit for 15 hours and the last 5 minutes are the goal to get, you know.
Yeah,
you never know.
For sure. I hear you 100%. I'm with you there. What is even inspiration? Just do it. Just go for it. Amazing. But that is going to be it for today, everybody. Jimmy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Have a good one.